So I think to continue the 70s, we can just kind of talk about some of the other actors or obscure shows that kind of close out this era.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. The Robotic Stooges.
Oh,
Robotic
yes.
Stooges, was this is a real thing. All right.
This was a real thing.
Yep.
They took the Three Stooges and made them cyborgs, but
Wow.
they didn't sound like the Three Stooges.
Couldn't afford to.
They could, I mean, they had, I know Frank Welker did the voice of Curly,
Wow.
but it wasn't like the Three Stooges that we grew up on. It wasn't much like spread out, we gotta find a bad guy. Hey, Mo, look what I found here, and Curly go, it wasn't like that. It was just like, they were superheroes.
Wow.
It was basically Dynamite times three.
It's a spin-off of the Skatebirds, it claims.
Yep. It was. Oh, man.
Skatebirds were basically a roller skating trio.
Was it a trio or a quartet? I keep thinking it was a trio or a
It
quartet.
looks like a quartet, but it's clean.
Yeah, I'm thinking it was a quartet.
Yeah, and they were kind of like the bastard kids of the Banana Splits when you think about it. But yeah, and the 70s kind of tails off because then all of a sudden you have like Mighty Man and Yuck Yuck.
Mighty Man and
Oh,
Yuck
yes.
Yuck.
What was the one fat? What was the one with the wolf? Fang
Fang
Face.
face.
Fang
Bang
Face.
face.
That's bridging into the 80s almost. That's where we're starting to see everything start to come around.
They're all
AB.
doing things everyday people do, like own a nightclub or have a police force or have a giant street and one of them's a mayor. It's just so wild how they're like, there's not really any social commentary in these cartoons like some of them would do, like with the Super Friends and all that. But it's interesting how it's like these guys are kind of more just,
Well,
hey,
the one,
we're hanging out,
yeah.
we're cool.
Well, the one that laid it on heavy with social comment was, Bill Cosby with the Cosby Show,
There you
the Fat
go.
Albert. And
That's irony for you.
the one episode that always stands out to me is the one where the kid gets shot. And no, and I swear to God, I remember watching that episode. And, it's like Cosby going, well, they learned a lesson that a life is precious. And and all, and I was like, oh my God, I didn't want to see a kid get shot on TV. But but that's how it was. He wanted to tell people what was going on in the world, So there wasn't really, social, like you said, social commentary. I wanted to see people getting hit in the face with pies and stuff like that,
It was interesting. I shared with JJ, you might find this funny, Tom. I shared with him just a bizarre list just showing, unfunny or very dark moments of otherwise often funny
Yeah,
sitcoms. Like, take a
very
break.
special episodes.
Right. Yeah,
Well,
someone would get shot or someone would have a baby, and
yeah.
I forgot about what was it? One of the other giant ones, I think Bea Arthur was on before Golden Girls that dealt with an
Maud.
abortion.
Maud, where she had the abortion.
It's like, man, it's like, and no
Yeah.
one wants to talk about
Well,
anything in fiction unless it's something that most people can resonate with, like you're
yeah.
living in the hood or you've got a activist father or something. I don't know.
Well, the thing is that when we were kids, all that stuff was going to come down the pike. And there were some shows in the 70s that were going to, teach us morals and stuff like that, But, Saturday mornings, we wanted to watch, cartoons. We
Kind of
wanted to
escape
escape.
before you turned it off
Yeah.
and had to go outside and, play on the poker
Yeah.
stick or the swing set.
Yeah. Or in my case, I had a, tr you know, I had the tree ladder from Tarzan, which just went up to the
Oh,
top. Yeah, it was like my dad's like, "I got you a Tarzan tree ladder," and I'm thinking to myself, "I'm gonna be like Tarzan." And I get on it, and it's like 5 minutes later, I'm like, "Okay, Dad, I'm done."
it's wild how everyone basically wants to swing around or jump endlessly among trees like Tarzan the Ape Man,
Yeah.
if not fly like Superman. Second most common one. Or read
Or
minds.
fall like Batman.
Right. Or, yeah, be a gadget man like Batman with a giant.
Now, The thing I've noticed about like the 80s, it's that when I was looking back on this before we were doing this, a lot of it was like excess, you know?
It was either based on a popular hit movie or show at the time, and they had an animated companion.
Or a toy.
Yeah, or a toy. So yeah, it's like for all the G.I. Joes and Transformers that Hasbro ruled, then you kind of have to have something to accommodate every other Ghostbusters or Star Wars type franchise. So it, like you say, it was often leftover ideas or just unproduced stuff just now being made, and they had to make it all hip and edgy for the 80s.
Yeah. Well,
the one thing, go ahead.
Well, Mr. the one T thing had one, is, Chuck Norris had one.
Yeah. But the thing that gets me is like, I was looking at like stuff from like 80, 81, 82. That's when everything starts to like kind of like fizzle out a little bit. Cause you remember we had, if anybody remembers, there was Drac Pack.
Oh, yes. One of my favorites.
Meatballs and Spaghetti. Pandemonium. And this is the one that gets me. I remember this, and I remember to this day, I made a joke about it one time in my stand-up set. When I was doing stand-up, I said, I watched Gilligan's Planet, and I swear to God, it's like, it's one of the last shows Jim Backus did, and I said, I think he was technically dead when they did it, because he said, because they have all the voices, like Alan Hale still has the same, you know, Russell Johnson, Marianne, Ginger, and it comes to like Jim Backus like, we came upon a transiting star, and it's like, oh my God, Jim, you know.
You always wondered if the recording had looped poorly on recast.
You know how sick he was. You know,
it's him on his deathbed, and they weren't going to accept no, because without his name, star power, it wasn't going to even get put on the air. But this is basically.
Yeah,
you kind of see a lot of this in the 90s where you see more and more of that. We'll make a movie or a show based on a toy gimmick or just a giant celebrity. Whoever has a talk show or an NFL athlete who's endorsed their brand with, you know, t-shirt or sneaker companies, they get a chance. They get at least one fling of the ring. They'll love it because they don't got to work hard to get their SAG card. They just play themselves.
Yeah.
And I think maybe I'm wrong on this, but I thought there was a Gilligan's Island cartoon that led into Gilligan's Planet.
The Gilligan's Island show was on in the 70s.
If I saw it, it was but a minute. It must have been like early Adult Swim programming when they didn't have any edgy things after Space Ghost and they just wanted to play it.
It was Filmation, and Filmation, Sherwood Schwartz kind of gave them the rights to do the planet episode, because if you watch it, it's, you know, you do see a title saying, you know, created by, you know, executive produced by Sherwood Schwartz. You know, he had a hand in it.
Yes.
You
know, he pops up, and much like Rankin Bass on the most unusual projects, you're just like, wait, oh, it makes sense. It totally makes sense.
But also, you start seeing these cartoons from another studio that was kind of the offshoot of Hanna-Barbera, which was Ruby Spears.
Ruby Spears.
Yes.
Yeah.
They had a sparkling logo or some shit like that.
And their big claim to fame was Thundar the Barbarian. Everybody thinks it's Hanna-Barbera. It was Ruby Spears. Joe Ruby and Ken Spears, they were two guys that worked under William, you know, Johan and Bill Barbera.
There you go. There's the confusion.
They came out with this cartoon that to us was like, wow, you know, Earth, you know, a comet hurtles between the Earth and the Moon. Earth is destroyed, you know, 1,000 years later, you know, there's this tribe, you know, there's like these like, you know, this like sorcery and science. Mm-hmm. And it's like now you're starting to see everything change around, you know, cartoon wise.
1,000%. And when you get to the 90s, I almost, half the time, I would think that they were made in the 80s, because some of them looked dated before they even came out, or they just were essentially kind of a knockoff of Ninja Turtles or basically an animated A-Team. Like, you'd have weird shit like SWAT Cats, and I always, for the longest time, it's the 80s, right? No, it's a 96 show, but it sure as hell looks like a Ninja Turtles knockoff, you know?
well,
have animals fighting crime in a giant A-team type spaceship or van.
I think the thing that gets me too is like you start to see a lot of cartoons start to fall by the wayside now because all of a sudden
it's too marketing.
Yeah, well, what happens is that these little blue people appear on NBC.
Oh,
the Smurfs come along and everything becomes like an explosion.
And that's
the reason why Super Friends got canned. They couldn't keep up with the Smurfs.
Right. It's amazing how every time everyone wonders why something falls, it's like when the cool kid, when the popular kid in school steals your thunder, it's hard to break through that ice.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's quality or not. If everyone wants to hang out with the cool kid, it takes them a while to figure out, wow, this is really toxic scene.
but then not only that, you know, you have shows that come back that are being done like kind of half-assed, like Popeye and Son.
Son. There was a really cruddy Rambo or RoboCop cartoon.
There was a RoboCop.
Chuck Norris.
What's the one they got in trouble for and they were like, okay, we got to pull that character off? Was that Rambo?
It might have been. And it was just stupid because this is like Rambo is a violent cartoon not meant for kids. Rambo and RoboCop is a satire, but the general audience thought it was a mindless action movie. So it was just like you're having all of these mixed bags and parents are still getting angry that, you know, before Terminator 2 even came along, just people are buying toys to violent R-rated movie they don't want their kids to see, but they'll let them play the games or watch the cartoons because they just think, oh, well, I even had pals who would play something like South Park or something, like, but the video games, and they're like, oh, it'll be different than the cartoon I don't want you to see. I'm like,
horse puppy.
The same thing.
Well, 84, everything starts to change. Like, ABC whips out Menudo, which was like the big teen group. And remember they had Monchi Cheese, The Puppies Adventures, Pound Puppies.
I watched a lot of Pound Puppies growing up, and that
Rubik's,
was weird how
Rubik the Amazing Cube, which was voiced by Ron Palillo.
Oh, wow.
Dungeons and Dragons. That's going to be... That's a show that has stuck with me since I was a kid.
Yeah, that's
and I knew many people.
That's a different side of the equation.
But I knew many people who, kind of like with Sonic the Hedgehog or Mario Brothers, if they didn't play the video games, or in that case, the board game, that was their introduction to it. I was just like, that is so wild.
Well, you know, they have Dungeon Master, who's like Yoda, Venture, who was like Venger,
He was Avenger.
Venger, who was like Darth Vader. And then there's a guy I know who wrote the scripts for Dungeons and Dragons, and we find out in the end that Venger was Dungeon Master's son.
Yes.
I swear I saw that on TV. I swear to this day I saw.
Yeah, that. Yeah, that was actually an episode, but there was also an unaired episode that was going to kind of throw everything together. And if you can find it, it is on the complete series of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
And you might also be able to find the audio version of it on YouTube.
Well, and that's what we have to thank for early DVD releases, because a lot of them would try and get as much uncut material as they could. They always struggled with shows like Hunter or Miami Vice live action shows, because they just had, unfortunately, too much commercially available music playing that just unfortunately
appeared.
Yeah.
But cartoons, they didn't have to worry about it. They would often, you know, it's like they just had the theme song, then they would just have it kind of on repeat or remix, you know?
Well,
yeah.
Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, that's fine. The way I see it is the early 80s is more about, and even into some of the mid-80s, it was dealing with more of the cute cartoons. You had your Smurfs, you had Get Along Gang, you had Shirt Tales, you had
The Wuzzles.
The Wuzzles.
There was even something Chuck Jones worked on that was like Raggedy Ann and Andy. He would always do adaptations of stuff based on like, it was just like how every other year on the World of Disney or on Hallmark Special on CBS, there'd be kind of an animated equivalent of, you know, like an American Girl story or, you know, just something that is, again, you know, based on a brand or a toy. And if it wasn't a toy, then it had to, again, like you say, be a beloved 70s cartoon or a popular 80s movie. But it was, like you say, is like after 83, it just is very unpredictable. And then, you know, Reagan type parents start saying, oh, our kids are watching too much on TV. Yeah. That's why I find even so funny how even the live action shows are basically going by cartoon logic. Like Captain Power is basically a live action 80s cartoon. You know,
Captain Power.
Sorry, go ahead.
Captain Power's like that, but there was also Captain Power was the ripoff. I thought that was a ripoff. Because you pointed at the screen.
Too. It looks so much like Power Rangers or something in it. You're like, what? But,
Tom, you were going to say something. I didn't mean to cut you off. I do apologize for that.
All good.
That's fine. Reagan was also responsible for the shift in the cartoons going from having to have a moral and stuff like that, but just turning into 30 or 23 minute toy advertisements too.
Yeah,
that opened the floodgates for a lot of the stuff that I think is still in our
it ate away at everyone's creativity in a way, because like in a way it's like they almost wanted to have kind of a voyage beyond to the bottom of the sea or Star Trek type thing where we explore and then at the end we got to fight someone but we can't kill them even though we got all we've ridden ourselves into a corner. We can't not get out of here and blow them up or beat them up and then return them to their island or their planet or what have you.
Well, the story of He-Man is very interesting because He-Man came out in 83.
Had to have been at least.
What they had wanted to do was Mattel wanted to do they were going to do Conan the Barbarian. And Mattel, they were looking at the toys and Mattel got wind of it and said, this is too violent. We can't have this. So if you watch Lou Shermer and Norm Prescott come along and say, hey, you know what? Why don't you just, or they rebrand it and say, we're going to name it He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, which is a lot, you know, we'll create all these characters and stuff like that. And Mattel got wind of it, or I think Filmation got wind of it and said, we'll create a cartoon. Now, everybody gets it wrong. He-Man was not a Saturday morning cartoon. He-Man was a weekday cartoon.
Yes, it was.
It's just they call it Saturday because it's like they watch the reruns.
Yeah.
It's always on Saturdays. It's like, no, we're at work that day. Look at the programming schedule it's been on.
And G.I. Joe. The ones that always stick with me after school were He-Man, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Mask, and Voltron.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsy, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
We're on all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
And Voltron is very intriguing how it's still going, and everyone, much like Transformers, has been introduced to like a different era of it each time and likes to debate. And it's kind of that point where it's like, I'm just glad it's still going. I'm glad that there's something where everyone can still come together and talk about the legacy of, and what impact it left on them. But it does get annoying how you even have to explain to people is like, okay, yeah, so these are technically toy commercials, but they work because the writers themselves really are trying hard to actually, even with, I had fun even with Thundercats, which again was basically out of rivalry with He-Man. And I was just like, hey, it's just fun. It's just escapism. They're in a kingdom. They fight, you know, various witches, demons, and wizards, and it's just fun. It's just really fun, and there's a reason a live-action card movie wouldn't even do these justice. There's just some stuff that should be in just a certain medium, and this is kind of it. It's just
exactly
it works well here.
Yeah, and even the Super Friends had to evolve to for the toy line, the Superpowers toy line, and even that very last season of Super Friends, Superpowers Team Galactic Guardians, that was just some awesome animation and had some pretty deep stories to it. The fear.
That was a great one. I love that one.
He also had the death of Superman in that one.
Yep.
But a lot of it, to me at least, I see 80s animation in a few different phases, one of them being that the shows like Voltron were catching on. So we were catching a little bit more of the Japanese influence. And also, we also saw that with an American version, or at least an American attempt to match that, called Mighty Orbots.
Yes.
Which is still one of my favorite cartoons and themes to this very day. And you also see that a little bit in Mask. I think you see a little bit in, you'll see it a little bit in like Thundercats and different things like that. But the Japanese influence on the animation really started to take hold.
Yeah.
And then you had the offshoots, the odd ones out, like Rubix, Qbert. They had CBS had Saturday Morning Starcade or.
Yes. Pitfall
and
Qbert, Donkey Kong Jr. What was it? Was it Dragon's Lair? No, it was Space Ace,
something like that. Yeah,
Space Ace.
Yeah, it was Space Ace because they had the guy who would transform at the most inopportune times.
Yeah, Pitfall.
Yeah,
was that an hour? That was an hour, right?
That was an hour.
Was Frogger
same? Yeah, Frogger was another one, and also along the same lines, but not directly related to it. Also, kind of going back to the Japanese style coming up, Pole Position.
Yeah, that was that. You can see that animation style coming in because that was all DIC. That was Dick, right? Dick.
Yeah. It was owned by Hasbro, would produce the toys alongside the cartoons. And so that was just wild how they figured out this avenue, how to, half the time you thought you were watching the cartoons because they didn't serve the advertisements, you know, every other commercial break. It's like, no, you're seeing a separate ad that's been made just for this, you know, exclusive, you know, time shift.
Do you know why Star Blazers was called Star Blazers?
I think I've heard the story, but it's been
because they went to a men's store to get clothing.
No, It was called Battleship Yamamoto.
Yes.
And they were like, we're gonna sell this as Battleship, and they're like, you do realize that Yamamoto was someone who was in World War II, and they're like, well, what should we call it? And they said Star Blazers. It sounds a lot better. And they were like, okay, fine, but
Star Blazers Galactica. No, don't do that.
But Tom, you remember Robotech?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
I do recall
that was on early in the morning on Saturdays, like 7 o'clock.
A decade later, Sam's Club would exclusively sell VHSs and DVD English dubs of popular animes. And I remember that was their introduction to Robotech. And like you say, it is just so wild how it's like when you have the toy aisle, cartoons, you got the ongoing adaptations of other popular medium and board games and movies. And then they're still finding that little small amount of time to insert, compilations of earlier Looney Tunes and Hanna-Barbera cartoons with like one or two new animations. And sometimes it wouldn't be unusual to see 80s and 90s dubs of popular 60s and 70s, Japanese imports like Kimba the Lion. I remember seeing tons of ads.
Yes. That was on Channel 11 here when I was growing up. Kimba the Lion.
Reproduced it just
Gigantor, Astro Boy. Yeah, we got all that over here, in New York, because they would play it on Channel 11 after school. Tom, do you remember the cartoon Turbo Teen?
Yes, I do. I think that was Ruby Spears, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. That was one, and then they had Goldie Gold and Action Jack.
Action Jack. Yeah.
Okay. I said to myself one day, I said, I gotta look this up, because I kept thinking this show didn't exist.
Nightmare fuel in your imagination. It was like, nope, it exists.
And it was so weird. I was swearing that Sid and Marty Krofft were sharing something with Ruby Spears.
Oh, yeah. And, they kind of fell off the map after the 70s. Because then they went into
bankruptcy.
No, they didn't go. Well, they went into bankruptcy when they opened the amusement park. But they were doing like TV shows in prime time, like the Mandrell Sisters. Jeff and Pink Lady.
There's also like a Capital Critter or something like that.
I keep thinking Capital Steps. Jesus. I know you're talking about. It was like
a home media release, or are they still kind of out there as collector's items?
the Mandrell Sisters, I think Barbara Mandrell owns that, like licensing. But the Crofts kind of fell off the map. In the 80s, they were doing their primetime shows and stuff like that. And if we look at those shows, like everything just started to get like more convoluted, stuff was starting to like kid video was coming up.
Yes. Another one that had that Japanese influence to it.
Yeah. Because if you look at it, it wasn't like the way it was. It was like more pencil drawing than anything else.
And it switched between the seasons. One was a little bit, I wouldn't necessarily call it more realistic, but it was more realistic than I think it was season two, when everything got super cartoony.
Yeah, yeah. And if you watch, there were a couple great shows that I think still stick with me. And I'm going to call him out. The Mental Misadventures of Ed Grimley.
Ed Grimley.
I tell the very expert joy, I must say.
oh, she's coming over, I must say. And that had Martin Short, Jonathan Winters.
Oh, yeah. And that was around the time. It wasn't much longer after that when freaking Howie Mandel and other people would just dedicate their...
We're just going, jumping in. But It had Joe Flaherty as Count
Floyd. As Count Floyd. Yeah.
Well, kids, hey, wasn't that scary, kids? Oh boy, you know, because like, so I would watch SCTV and I'd be like, I want to wait till Count Floyd comes on, and he'd come out and he'd be like, but that's another thing. But thing. But they did Ed Grimley. They did what was the one? Galaxy High, which actually won an Emmy or a Peabody.
Maybe both. I would not be surprised, but I even try to tell people what the Peabodys are nowadays, and they don't recall it. I'm like, oh, they give out awards, especially to comedy or animated programs or sci-fi for that matter.
Yeah. But there was one where they did for like an anti-drug one, and it was amazing. You know, I was like,
it was actually witty, and it didn't preach to the choir. It was like, hey, you know, I recommend you not do it. And by the way, we're going to entertain you too while you're listening.
Yeah. What is it? Doyle takes this drug that like makes him super hyper, and he begins to like. Oh yeah, no, it was heavy, man. It was like, okay, I'm not doing drugs.
It was intense. I call it some overacting, but it was pretty well done.
The one thing that gets me though is like a lot of shows made a comeback, like the Chipmunks made a comeback.
Oh yes.
Yep.
There'd be funny times where we would be recording programs and half the time it just skipped to the Chipmunks. We just recorded over the tapes way too damn much. Like, you know, got part of one of those animated. And this is when Disney Channel and Nickelodeon would often share each other's properties before they started putting up their barriers.
Yeah.
Only showing in-studio programs unless it's one of those other companies we still have a license with.
Well, the thing was that also cartoons were starting to, you know, that's where that whole thing, like, you know, Mr. T had a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mr. T had one.
It was so wacky. And,
you know, they brought back after, and Tom, you remember this, after they did Super Friends, they, 86 or 87, they, Jim Byrne redoes the Man of Steel comic. And they put him on. And it's the whole, you know, it's kind of like the whole thing where they changed some of the characters around, you know, and I got it a little bit, but you know, it was like all of a sudden, like all the stuff we had grown up in the '70s was now getting, you know, taken away little by little, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was like, we had stuff like the Trollkins, the Dukes of Hazzard had a cartoon.
Yes. It was like, there's an animated counterpart to everything, and you wondered how much of it was just they wanted to just share the airwaves, and everyone was like, well, we don't got any ideas, anything new, so we might as well just share the airtime. Like any unproduced script in the live action that we didn't make use of, let's make use in the animated companion.
I'll give you the greatest idea, the greatest but the worst thing they ever did in the history of cartoons. Nice. And Tom, you can call me out and say that's true. Gary Marshall is gonna lose. Donnie Most and Ron Howard, they're leaving Happy Days.
Oh,
and God. He says, you know what I'm gonna do? Let's make a cartoon of Happy Days.
Oh yes. Oh God. Don't.
Happy Fonzie and the Happy Days gang. And then he says, well, what's the other big hit I have? Laverne and Shirley. Laverne and Shirley go in the army and they're bossed around by a pig. And Cindy Williams is on the first season, and then she left, and the woman who played Miss Yvonne in Pee-wee's Playhouse, which we have not talked about yet, jumps in to take over the voice. And then he says, well, I've got one more show I'm going to do. And what's the last show he puts on?
Mork and Mindy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fonz and the Happy Days gang went off the air, and they had Fonz join the motor pool where Laverne and Shirley were. And like, you're thinking to yourself, wait, I don't remember them being in the army with Fonzie. What, and Mr. Cool, and what is this? My brain, it's going
by
to
the fall. Way, you can actually get these both on made to order DVDs.
They have them on YouTube.
The cartoon version. Oh, I'm sure they do.
Oh God. They had Mork and Mindy. I'm sorry. I'm jumping in every conversation here. I apologize for this.
They have Mork
going back into, like, he's in high school, and he meets a high school age Mindy and her father, and you know he drives around in a car that looks like an egg, and he's got a dog with like five legs or something. I mean, it was just so weird to watch.
Yeah.
You know.
Poor Donnie
Mork. I'll do you one better, or should I say three better? Pro Stars.
Oh God,
that was like a wrestling show, right?
No,
it wasn't.
I'm looking.
It was
up.
Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, and Bo Jackson. Anime.
Oh, yeah. Oh shit!
Using their sports related gadgets to fight crime. Yeah. And the thing is that Michael Jordan really literally appeared in like one.
Even though
live,
then
he also did some live action stuff, and Jordan literally appeared in like one, and that they kept repeating that one over
Wayne
and over
Gretzky
again. But they
didn't even voice himself. That's right. I saw that for like a 5 second, and I just recall it just like, what's going on here? It almost looks like the Mighty Ducks cartoon on Toon Disney, which was just bizarre because it's like they're actual ducks. I'm like, no, that is not the point. No.
I'll go one better. Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling.
Wrestling Connection.
Where they did and at that time, they were when they released it, WrestleMania 1 had just happened, and they were going to do WrestleMania 2, and they had Roddy Piper as the bad guy. And if anybody remembers, Roddy Piper was gonna turn what they call a face, which is a good guy. So and Andre was going to be a bad guy. So they completely screwed it up. But you know who voiced Hulk Hogan in that show?
Oh, God. It was
Brad
someone
Garrett.
In Brad.
That's right.
Brad Garrett was the voice of Hulk Hogan. And the guy who played Uncle Phil on
James Avery. Wow.
James Avery played the Junkyard Dog.
Shredder, man.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Missed that dude.
It's coming soon. Everybody loves the Hulkster, brother.
I remember they had it on WWE Network, and when that whole thing happened where he started like doing racial epithets, it was like they just pulled it off right away.
He needed something more infamous than, I don't know, Beastmaster 2 to star in, James Avery, man.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised they never did a Beastmaster cartoon.
Right? It was another one of those. Yeah. However cheap they were to film, for whatever reason, it's just like Universal and the other affiliates just said it'd just be easier to just release them to TV or whatever. But like they did freaking crappy like Highlander and Mortal Kombat cartoons that had no continuity with the current movies or video games. It was just like, let's just throw random shit in here and related in name only. And with Highlander, by the way, Sean Connery comes back again as Ramirez, but it's someone else who sounds like him. But once again, it doesn't really mean anything because Ramirez is dead, long dead, and he died when he brought him back again. So again, he's just still out there in this alternate universe.
Let's just say I had a really good agent.
I'll just do this way. McLeod, my name is. Yes, you're there can only be one in the cloud.
One, I'll take the rapist for 500.
and then everybody, and you got to remember that era, 1980s, Star Wars comes to an end.
Mm-hmm.
So there's
more
a big rumor. Yep. There was a big rumor going around. Hey, they're going to do a Saturday morning cartoon of Star Wars. Really? Yeah. What do we get? Droids and Ewoks. Droids.
Oh God!
Made by Novella, who was a Canadian animation firm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Who did the Star Wars cartoon on the Star Wars Holiday Special in 1978?
Oh man!
And then Novella released released Star Chaser, the Legend of Orin, remember that?
Oh.
Where it was, and I'm thinking to myself, I watched it on TV, and I said, you think George Lucas was on the phone with his lawyers at this point? Because you can't find that thing anywhere.
And it was just so weird because it looked just as schlocky as the Boba Fett cartoon that played in the holiday special.
Oh, yeah. But what's weird about that is that they had the actors doing the voices in that. And now you look at Lucasfilm now, they've got, you know, the Bad Batch, the Clone Wars, Rebels.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. they did the Clone, you know, the Clone Wars in 2003. That was all
Jenny Tartakovsky and a bunch of the other Cartoon Network MVPs.
Dave Filoni. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were all, you know, but remember, it starts with Ewoks and Rebels, you know.
In all fairness, it didn't take much for them to one-up them, because this is like, you would even try and buying those Ewoks or Droids cartoons or rent them, and it's like, it was even more confusing because they would just compile like 3 to 5 episodes together without any correlation. And so you're like, wait, how long is this again? Oh, this is basically a giant record on loop and just no designation of what even the time is. I'm kind of losing track of what's going on here.
Well, they used to remember we used to have stuff shoved in front of us, you know.
Yeah, everyone's still going by that logic, just anything to keep the kids occupied so their parents don't have to deal with them for 2 hours.
And we had those Saturday morning previews where we were all watching and seeing what show's going to be on, you know. And I remember, you know, staying up till about 8, 9 o'clock to watch it. And the one year I remember CBS flipped because they moved Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner to ABC. And ABC, I think, flipped Superman over to CBS.
Share the ratings.
Yeah.
Before we were doing all these crossovers for St. Elsewhere and what have you. And now riddle me this. I'm sorry to cut you off there. But so just like how The Simpsons would make appearances on Sesame Street and Tracy Ullman before they got their ginormous cartoon franchise, weren't there some other cartoons? I may be remembering this wrong, and just tell me if I'm dead wrong. Weren't there some other cartoons that premiered on Pee-wee's Playhouse and then they got their own short-lived continuation? Or am I thinking of something else?
You're thinking of something else, because I know there was Penny.
Yeah. And I was like, I can never figure out if that, but I remember seeing vague images of it, especially in like the best 80s cartoon specials. I was like, I'm pretty sure that was on, you know, rerun years later on like Fox Kids or what have you. But
well, Pee-wee's Playhouse was so fun to watch.
Oh, totally. You know? It was a variety hour. It brought out the kid in everyone. And
exactly.
You could watch it. There was something, much like the Muppets, there was something for adults and there's something for kids. And you never had any warning of something that would be too much or just over the top. And you're just like, no, let's all hang out. There's some puppets, there's some real people. And then it's just witty.
Well, the thing with this too, I loved about it was that you look who's on that show. It's Phil Hartman, Lin-Marie Stewart,
say Apatha Martin,
Lawrence Fishburne,
Cowboy Curtis, still call him that.
William Marshall as the King of Cartoons, Blackula.
William Marshall, yes. And
I am the King of Cartoons.
I am the King of Cartoons, and I kid you not. Anytime I see a green faced like demon or something in a movie, I'm always like, that's got to be Jambi the Genie's cousin.
Yeah.
William Marshall. I'm also going to do a loop back to another 80s cartoon. Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
He voiced Iron Man in the episode where the Spider Friends came together for the first time.
That was a good recognition of an inside joke.
Nice. Movie. I did not know he did that. I have to watch that because I had to.
It literally came to me when you mentioned his name. It's like, oh crap!
Gotta be a YouTubeable moment at least by now.
Well, here's the thing. Everybody remembers. I'm sorry.
And you could tell it's him. It is his voice.
Yeah.
And there's even a little screw up in the episode where the driver, the chauffeur, and Tony's voices swap for one scene.
Yes, I remember that.
Oh my God, that's great.
So you go from something that sounds really remarkable like this to, there's something wrong.
Oh no.
Yeah, so somebody in AR must have been like, shit, we put the wrong ones in.
You know? It's out of sequence. But, oh shit.
But if you watch Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, that's the first time we see Wolverine.
Yes.
Yes.
And the X-Men. But the X-Men. What does Wolverine sound like?
Australian.
Yes.
Oh, you're dull. Can't put a piece of fruit.
I'm a Wolverine.
Like, what the hell? What the hell is this crap?
Get all these New Zealand and Australian actors to play him in live action form. Oh, the irony.
That was the big rumor. Mel Gibson was going to play Wolverine if they did an X-Men movie.
I remember that. I think De Niro was even attached at one point because of his height and someone watching Cape Fear one too many times.
But that was the one where they had, if I remember, it was Professor X, Colossus, Thunderbird.
Yes, there was the one with the maze. They had Sprite.
Sprite, which was Kitty Pryde.
Kitty Pryde.
Kitty Pryde, baby.
And Jean Grey.
Did they have Jean Grey?
I think they had Jean Grey. Did they have Cyclops? They didn't do Cyclops. I know that.
That was until.
No, they did do Cyclops. They had Cyclops in both episodes.
Okay.
And they had Storm.
Yes. But it was the longer version of Storm.
Yeah.
Fun fact, if you guys ever want some other stories told, you can definitely actually, the writers of the 92 iteration of X-Men are on Twitter and will definitely take your questions if you got any.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. I have some things I need to ask them.
And they keep appearing on the Who Would Win podcast, shout out, which has some hysterical versus matches often between people from movies, cartoons, video games, and comic books, and they have to always state what version of the character they are using before the fight, and the judge is often a recurring guest, often a famous voice actor, and much fun.
Here's the thing that gets me. You remember Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, but they had a Hulk cartoon too.
Yes, and yes, they did.
Do I keep thinking Lou Ferrigno wasn't doing the voice. That was the 90s version.
I think Neil MacDonald also did a voice as well.
Yeah.
Fame, but that was 90s too. So, yeah, I'm not sure which of the
centers. I want to say it was, if I remember correctly, the guy who played Bruce Banner, I want to say he also did the voice of Duke on G.I. Joe. Wait
a minute. Give me a minute. Hold on.
I think you're on to something because there were a lot of G.I. Joe people working
Michael
on
Bell. Michael Bell. That's the guy's name. Michael Bell was the voice of Zan on
Super Friends.
Super Friends, yeah. And he was also the guy in MASH. If you remember, he's the helicopter pilot or something like that, where he gives the kids like dangerous stuff. Like, you know, they got to do this stuff. Let me look it up. Hold on. Hulk cartoon 1982.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah, I'm gonna look this up because I know Michael Bell's work. I've heard
sometimes the army men would almost look like they were in the G.I. Joe Corps.
Oh.
It was like, because Marvel did a lot of the comics, I think, not mistaken.
Marvel had G.I. Joe's property for like 8-9 years.
And it's so wild how DC later bought Malibu Comics. And the same thing, too, is like one of them would be doing Deep Space Nine comics and the other one would be doing like Next Gen or Original Series comics. And then eventually it was like Paramount bought the whole property back and sold it to like someone else to do adaptations of. But it was wild how what spinoffs with their other existing medium they were able to do for some time. It's just like, okay, and now the Ninja Turtles are going to fight, you know, these guys, or the G.I. Joe guys are going to be in part of S.H.I.E.L.D. helping them out with Cobra Commander.
Hold on, I got it. I'm getting to it right now. Give me a minute.
All good.
Because I remember that Hulk cartoon, it was like, it shows him like getting trapped in a box with spikes.
He got beat up so much on those cartoons.
Yeah.
Like, something that in the comic book iterations and even the movies is like would not even phase him 1 minute, but for the sake of a cartoon, there's like, well, let's just say he gets captured somewhere somehow. He gets knocked out. Yep. Even though this is technically just a giant rock that hit him that wouldn't phase him.
Yep. Also, it was Michael Bell. Nickelback.
Yes. And one more thing that I thought I remembered, then I just checked and verified. William Marshall also played Juggernaut on the aforementioned Spider-Man The Amazing Friends episode with the X-Men.
Yes.
I'm coming for you, Charles Xavier. Yes.
Oh man, he had such a deep voice, and Juggernaut is just one of those others. They should a solo movie dedicated to him would be so much fun, just because you just could be so campy. But it's just so wild how anytime they've tried doing like other future cartoons and movies of it, they never even bring up the fact that he's like related to Xavier. They're just like, it's too much. He's just a smart guy who busts through things Hulk style.
Well, Bob Ridgely, who played. You may know him as the voice of Down and Dirty Duck, and he was also in Tarzan.
Did they also do DuckTales or Tarzan voiceovers?
He did. He was the voice of Thundar in Thundar the Barbarian. He played the Colonel in Boogie Nights. Okay, so he did. He was Thunderbolt Ross in that show.
That's nice.
But he was also in the New Adventures of Flash Gordon when that came out.
That's incredible.
Yep. So bringing a whole new meaning to Ariel Ookla Ride.
Ookla Lords of Light.
It wasn't too, and that was almost around the same time they were doing like spinoffs of spinoffs in cartoons. Yeah. Darkwing Duck was another one, and it was like
DuckTales. Darkwing Duck.
Like I would watch those back to back, and often think they were the same show. They weren't, but that was just
Chippendale's Rescue Rangers.
I watched a bunch of that.
Tailspin.
I got them mixed up with Rescue Rangers. I'm like, well, similar. They're both appeared on there.
Tailspin, I thought was really cool because Tailspin, they couldn't get. George, whatchamacallit, from the Jungle Book,
right,
to play Shere Khan. So they got Tony Jay, who you would know from like Star Trek. He was always he had that same voice as George Sanders.
I do recall the name Tony Jay, and I remember looking at his credits, but he was one of those like I would never recognize him. He had a high pitched voice, and
He was very sort of like this when he talked.
Oh, okay, more laid back. Shit. And who am I thinking? There's another.
You're thinking of Sterling Holloway.
Fuck. Okay. Damn.
Jim Cummings took over the role.
Yes, Jim. And Jim has just. I love his narrations. It's like. He would reuse his Tigger laugh and basically do evil voiceovers. He was basically channeling his inner Jeremy Irons half the time. It just seemed he's going to know, and then became the voice for Kids WB in the mornings. That was great. Kids WB.
Do you guys think that there were some shows that just shouldn't like. There's some shows like we've heard about, you know, we know about. There's some shows I've always said, like, I remember seeing being advertised in a comic book, and this was one that really got me, was The Young Astronauts.
Yes.
This was one that was going to be put on in 85, or they were going to put it on in 86.
I want to say it was 86 because of the
86.
The reason why these. Because the reason they scrapped it was because of the Challenger.
Yeah. It was going to be a show like Terry, and they were going to do Terry and the Pirates.
I think that's why I didn't hear about it, because often if there was something chaotic, you know, this was pre-9/11, where if they even remotely detected that something might be too familiar to an infamous incident, they were just like, hey, let's either show it at midnight where no one notices, or just, you know, rewrite it a bit, tweak it, redub it.
They had the storyboards already. I think they shot one episode and then they pulled the plug on it.
I will have to look that up.
Yeah. And I remember that, but I remember shows that came on like Going Bananas.
I vaguely seem to recall hearing that. I definitely heard the theme song at one point. It was like,
and that was one of those ones where it was, NBC was trying to get back on the live block with things, and they couldn't do it.
They wanted that chipmunk.
Yeah.
No, they wanted to have that Sid and Marty Krofft feel with what they were doing, but it was just so terrible. They said,
I
think
that's why I don't recall it. It is like, it was just like, you would get bored, and this is when you're a kid and you don't have any sense of real, you know, quality. So it's like, you know, something's bad if a cartoon is boring you and the voices aren't well interjected.
Or the actors are just so terrible. It's like, oh my God.
The story, like, doesn't make any sense.
There was only one guy on that was really memorable. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but I think his first name was Marky. He had like black frizzy hair.
Wait a minute, he was blinking in Men in Tights. He was also on Fridays.
Oh yes,
okay.
Wasn't he later on the West Wing? I think as like the British ambassador. I think.
Yeah, but he was also on Saved by the Bell, because I remember he had to play a college professor
always that type. He'd be the professor. He was
always playing like these wacky ass characters. And
that's kind of what he is.
Yeah, Mark. I know it. Dang, I know it.
But yeah,
I want to say it was Blankenship or something like that.
Mark. Oh God, I'm gonna look it up. Now you got me going. I'm going to look at the Friday's cast. That's a show that nobody really talks about because nobody remembers it. But I remember it, and I
thoroughly enjoyed it, especially because of the news section from Melanie Chardoff.
Well, that was the show that kind of like
Michael Richards, you know, was on.
Michael Richards and Larry David.
Yeah.
I'm going to look up. And there was that, and there was the new show. You remember the new show? Nobody remembers that. Mark Blankfeld. That's it. Mark Blankfeld.
Okay.
Yeah, because that had Larry David, Michael Richards, Melanie Chardoff, Meredith Burrell. I remember Meredith Burrell from TV shows, like on and off. But yeah, I remember him being like
Antonio Vargas.
He'd always put
Antonio Vargas.
Antonio Vargas.
I think so. Yeah.
Antonio Vargas was on that show.
Yeah.
I wish they had done an animated Starsky and Hutch. To be honest with you.
I think we got to wrap it up.
Like they have to stop a guy who's. All right.
But we can pick this up definitely. Again, next week, just some other just
oh god, yeah,
80s and 90s ones. But yeah, I gotta do a Mortal Kombat Q&A with the actor who played Quan Chi on Conquest.
Okay,
we'll have fun.
Had a consistent. Yeah, he should be in one of the group chats we're in.
Okay.
But
oh man, I had fun on this tonight.
We went to town, but yeah. Thank you ever so much. And I will, again, I'm going to get to town on editing these pretty fast.
Yeah. I'll put it on my page that, you know, I've been doing this. I actually told people I've been doing this. And Tom and Cam, you guys are great to work with.
Thank you. Yeah, well, you're always
the feeling mutual.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.